Okay. All right, I'd like to welcome everybody here and call to order our regular meeting of September 21st, 2017. Can I have a roll call, please?
Mr. Luke?
Here.
Ms. Savage?
Here.
Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. And next up, if everybody could stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And thank you, Raymond, for hosting us tonight. It's always fun to come out here and see what's happening. So I think first up on our agenda is the presentation from Raymond. So.
We usually adopt the agenda.
Just a second. I missed something. I missed the adoption of the agenda. Sorry, I'm just flying right over that. Sorry. Do I have a motion to adopt our agenda, please?
Second.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Okay, now, sorry about that. You're up.
First, just welcome to Raymond. We appreciate everybody finding us, first of all. We wanted to start the presentation tonight by honoring a community partner that we have. We are so fortunate to have the Raymond Public Libraries, the Marysville Public Library, but the Raymond Branch, so close to us, and we feel very blessed to have Kate, who is the Youth Services Manager. I looked it up and we ended up going to get
your title changed.
Yes. But we are so fortunate to have her come out. She comes out to each of our library classes and reads to the kids and talks to them about some of the different activities and things that are happening, not only at the Raymond Branch, but also at the Marysville Library. And then, in addition to that, we take field trips over to the library where the kids can pick out books. The librarians there are wonderful to help our little ones choose some books. We just want to foster that love of reading. Hopefully, in return, you know, we're giving you an audience and kind of promoting what's going on at the library. And she never fails. I mean, she comes. And every class you're touching, so almost 300 kids. So we certainly appreciate. We have a plaque for you. Yes. Thank you. Aw, this is awesome. Sorry. It says Kate McCartney has been served as Raymond Public Library as a strong community partner for Raymond Elementary, and an appreciation for the time spent reading and sharing. So, thank you very much. We look forward to continuing that partnership and growing. We've talked about having even more classes coming out and other ways that, you know, we can work together just to promote reading in the reading community. So, we appreciate it.
And the board appreciate you too. And I know this was kind of an idea of ours to start this year to be recognizing all the great partnerships. And so every building I think is going to highlight some of those partnerships. So we appreciate everything that you do. And I know we're looking forward to having our community coffee at the library this Saturday.
Yes, that one's ready for you. Okay. She's excited to have you out. Right. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. So, and we're going to continue with that reading theme tonight. What we wanted to kind of highlight are some of the changes that have taken place over the last few years with regards to reading at Raymond and helping our boys and girls with their reading skills. And we know that it does take courage to let go of the familiar and embrace the new. So we are working hard to do that. You know, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but, you know, really trying to figure out, you know, what's going to be best for our readers at Raymond. So, again, change is kind of the name of the game. We are improving, we're growing, we're evolving, we're adapting in order to personalize instruction and meet the needs of our kids. So reading at Raymond, when we think about that, you know, we know that research tells us we better be paying attention to the five big ideas for reading. Phonemic awareness, phonics, comprehension, vocabulary, fluency. We have to make sure that we are instructing our boys and girls, but knowing that each child may take a different pathway and may need something different from us in order to become successful with their reading skills. So one of the things that we've done, but we have definitely improved, we have to start with some data and some initial assessment data. So looking at a universal screening for all kids, we had one particular reading tool, which, you know, teachers would sit down, listen to the kids read, kind of take a miscue analysis, but we knew we were missing some things. So with our new literacy director, Steve Griffin, he actually brought some different assessments to the district. We're now using more norm-referenced assessments, so our AIMS-Web, our comprehensive test of phonological awareness. Whoa, that's a mouthful, right? The kids don't have to say it, but that's what we administer to typically our younger kids, but we can administer it to any level. Also our iReady, our online diagnostic tool. So with that universal screening, it's going to give us information in order to better meet the needs of our kids. And then we're going to be able to provide this core instruction, or what we call this Tier 1 instruction. The Tier 1 instruction, it should meet the needs of the majority of our kids. And we knew that we were doing a pretty good job of meeting the needs of most of our kids. But in a minute, we'll talk about, you know, the reasons why we knew we needed to add something different. So again, that core instruction, it's going to meet or exceed. Students are going to meet or exceed expectations. Most kids. Again, we were better able to provide this core instruction based on those initial assessments that we were conducting. So Beth Ann's going to talk a little bit. Beth Ann Morey is our literacy coach, and she's a reading specialist this year, dual role. And she's going to talk just a little bit about the core instruction. Again, this Tier 1 level of instruction for all kids.
And as Carol said, it is for all students. And so in that are several components that are happening on a daily basis. There's guided reading, which is a small group approach to reading. The interactive read aloud, shared reading, phonics embedded, writing instruction, and blended learning options. For our reading program to be impactful, you have to adjust, as Carol said, to meet the needs of all the children. So this is just showing you what that looks like. We have the read aloud with the whole group instruction, the guided reading and small group instruction, and then again, independent, which we have moved more towards a blended reading approach with additional programs like iReady and Lexia that has helped better meet the needs of kids and where they're at. We also had, Mr. Griffin also brought to us a green list, which is looking at moving from basic code, which is the letters and sounds match each other, and moving in toward advanced code, which has more letters than sounds. And so those lists there move in a sequential kind of framework up to a point, and then it becomes where the kids need to know all of those. So it doesn't have to go in exact order, but we're making sure that they have that foundational skills built there. Red high frequency word lists is what they're going to see and when they're beginning readers, and those are words that aren't able to just sound out, that they need to just know by sight. The Hegarty Phonemic Awareness is a program that teaches all those phonemic awareness skills that are necessary for the foundation we're going to be looking at in the next two video clips. You're going to see that instruction happening in the classroom with Tier 1, and then we're going to show how that same type of teaching with rhyming and letter sounds moves into our Tier 2 instruction of Spire and Sound Sensible.
And we knew that phonics and phonemic awareness, again, looking at our data, was definitely an area that needed beefed up. And again, Mr. Griffin was familiar with this program. It's only as good as our teachers. And Mr. Delt does a great job of working with the program, but also meeting the needs of kids. So we just wanted to show a quick and... Adam, can I ask you a question? I'm so sorry, this didn't pop up the way it did when I presented first. So it's not showing up here like it did when. There we go. Thank you. That's what I needed. All right, so we're going to listen. Mr. Delt will actually, as she's watching kids, can also take what she's noticing and what she's observing, and then when she meets with small groups, she'll be able to better meet the needs then of individual kids as well, but starting with that whole group instruction. So, that core, the core instruction, that Tier 1, again, it's going to meet the needs of most of our kids. However, we know that there are students who are going to need additional support to meet those expectations. And this is where I think the biggest change, Mrs. Van Dusen would probably agree, has come at Raymond. And Judy Van Dusen is our reading specialist, and she's going to talk a little bit about some of these specific interventions and how our Tier 2 has changed it. For kids. Thank you.
We've done intervention for a really, really long time, but we haven't been able to meet the needs of all the children with our interventions. We've known that there were more needs than we had interventions for. So about, let's see, 1987, I believe we brought Reading Recovery into the Marysville schools. And Reading Recovery was highly successful at that time. We had a success rate of about 88% of our children that were back to grade level. But Reading Recovery started to tail off and not be quite as successful. It was good for some of our kids, but not all of our kids. So we had the LLI program, Level Literacy Intervention. That program worked great for some kids, but we knew there were still some kids that we were missing. So since Mr. Griffin's not here, he's the best hire you've made in years. He's brought those pieces into the district that we have desperately been needing, those pieces that we know kids needed and we just didn't know how to reach them. So some of those programs are Lexia. Lexia is being used primarily with kindergarten, a little bit into first grade, really working on building that phonemic awareness and that phonological awareness, being able to hear. The kids have to be able to hear the sounds, manipulate all those things in their head before they're ever going to do pencil and paper work. So an excellent program, it is a computer program. He's brought into our district Sound Sensible Inspire. Sound Sensible Inspire is a very sequenced program that specifically teaches kids everything they need to know. Some kids, when they're reading, just automatically pick up on things and they're good to go. They're going to learn in spite of what we as teachers do for them. These are the kids that need everything just illicitly taught, and that's the program we're working now. The programs that he brought into the district are best for kids, not easiest for teachers. There's been a tremendous amount of change, but with the growth we're seeing with the children, they're definitely the right programs. EET, the Expanding Expression Tool, is a program that our new speech and language therapist, Adrian Dara, brought to the table. New ideas coming out of Ohio State, great ideas, supporting the classwork that our teachers are doing. Repeated reads is simply what it says, trying to build fluency, reading things more than one time. But Steve has brought a whole set of materials to us. So we knew the concept, but we didn't always have the materials that we needed. Focused comprehension, really honing in on those comprehension skills. The Read It Again program, once again, just practicing fluency. So I think what we've done is we finally have put the pendulum in the middle. We've quit swinging from one side to the other. We've kept the best of the programs. Reading Recovery had awesome components, still use it. LLI had awesome components, still use it, but it wasn't meeting the needs of all the kids. So now we're picking up some of these new components and plugging those in, which is allowing us to personalize the learning for each child. We go from a guided reading group where those kids just need another reading lesson to a sound sensible lesson where those kids have not yet figured out the rhyming. They can't hear the beginning sounds. They don't know the ending sounds. To Aspire lesson where now we're ready to read, but it's very slow and very phonics oriented. To a group that's not fluent, so maybe we'll take those children for 4 weeks and we'll get that fluency up. Our group, because of Carol's support and Carol's flexibility, we're also able to put kids into intervention and get them back out of intervention. They're not in intervention for an entire year. Perhaps they're in for 6 weeks, they're fixed, they're gone, we're pulling in more kids. So having her as a principal has really helped make this job a lot easier. You're welcome to come and observe at any time, please, because there's exciting things going on in intervention. And I guess the last thing I'd like to say is, for the kids that we haven't met the needs for before, typically those kids are going on to special education. We're now providing interventions that's going to save a lot of our children and not put those labels on them. And that's what I'm most excited about. And I'm really nervous talking to
them. So you would like to see Judy in action. A little snippet.
See, the arrow's pointing at the very edge. This is male. What is it?
Male.
This is run. What is it?
Run.
This is jeep. What is it?
Jeep.
And this is, oops, that's the wrong one. This is bone. What is it?
Bone.
All right. This is a phone. Colton, which picture lines with phone? Phone.
Phone bone.
I like what you did. You were saying it, weren't you? Phone bone. Phone bone. I like the way you called yourself. Great job. Okay, Matthew, are you ready? This is a sheep. What is it? What word rhymes with sheep? That's right. Sheep. Sheep. Rhyme. Well done.
It's like a sheep.
I didn't put that out.
say jellyfish without saying fish?
Jellyfish.
Now say playground.
Playground.
Now say playground without saying ground.
Play.
That's right. Now say inside.
Inside.
Now say inside without saying in.
Side.
That's right. One more. This is the last one. Say toothbrush.
Toothbrush.
Now say toothbrush without saying tooth.
Brush.
Nice job.
Ah, we fall off.
Here's the good one. And I believe that H is going to go right up here. All right. Fellas, I want you to say the word slip.
Slip.
Let's chop it. Slip. What's the first letter you hear in slip?
S.
Which pull it down, please?
S.
Now stop every time you're in your work here. What's the next letter you hear in slip?
I really was paying attention.
Yeah. No. She let it play out, and I loved it because the kids then, they found their own mistake, and they were able to, they were able to go back and correct it on their own. Mm-hmm. So there you can see the difference, hopefully, in a whole group lesson, but then some of the more in-depth, explicit teaching. And that's, you saw 3-4 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's a 30-minute lesson. So it's packed. Mm-hmm. They're getting a lot. And kudos to Mrs. Van Dusen. Can't teach an old dog new tricks. You absolutely have learned a lot of new tricks. Mm-hmm. And every year I'm so impressed with her knowledge and willingness to learn and grow. She's taking on Beth Ann now to kind of help, I think, mentor her a little bit. Mm-hmm. But our children at Raymond are definitely in good hands, especially in this Tier 2. Mm-hmm. Just to show you real quick what our Tier 2 instruction kind of looks like in terms of the number of students that we're serving. Kindergarten right now, approximately 25% of our kids are working on Lexia and getting some additional support. First grade, really K and 1, that's where you want to focus the majority of that Tier 2 instruction. And then the fruits of your labor are going to show up, and it has with our second grade group. This second grade group is the first all-day, every-day kindergarten group. It's the first group that's also had these interventions. And Mrs. Andrews last year was our reading specialist. So you can see our third and our fourth grade, while we've incorporated and put some of those interventions into place, you can see we still have some need there, and we're meeting their needs. But I wish, you know, we had had some of these things when they were little. We did, you know, what we, and we were still meeting their needs, but obviously we're doing a much better job now. So very excited for the future. Our oral reading fluency data then, again, kind of confirmed that. Our second grade, this is basically looking at how fluent are our kids in a minute. How many words can they read? Right now, our second grade, we're looking pretty good. And again, this is all norm referenced. So about 88% of our kids are at low risk. We have about 12% at that moderate. And that kind of correlates with that tier two instruction. But again, our third and our fourth grade, we still have work to do. And we're working hard. So currently, too, and this is all through the magic of Mark Gallagher and Steve Griffin, we're able to kind of make some projections as far as, you know, how are kids presenting themselves right now based on that iReady data that we took. And right now, we have about 64% of our kids for third grade that are presenting a positive testing profile. To get that language, because I wanted to make sure I said it correctly. You know, we're hoping that we'll definitely get a bump from our 38% passage in the fall last year. We know our kids can do much better. So we're hoping that through some of the interventions that we've put into place and the work of the teachers in K-1 and 2, that we're going to see an increase in our third grade fall year projection. So fingers crossed. And again, thank you, though, for giving us time to share. I'm sorry, Ms. Minkins, I think I went over a little bit, didn't I? I'm closing up. Questions for us or for my colleagues?
Judy mentioned that it's meeting the needs of kids, but it's probably a challenge in terms of teaching something. As I understand it, all the information
we don't cry, we celebrate.
Well, and the real question is, I know change that occur overnight, and can you give me some sense of how much study and practice and in-service and all the other things you've had over the last several years to be able to get this implemented
I would say the PD and the training and the practice in the last 3 years has probably been more than I've had in the last 20 years prior to that. So we're supported by Steve primarily. He did a lot of the initial training. From there, it's really get in and get your feet wet and really figure out what works. Meredith and I spent a lot of time together last year trying to figure out, we'd have conversations on how we're organizing things, thinking we're doing everything exactly the same, and then look at each other's system of organization, and it was nothing alike. Even though we talked the talk, that it worked for her, and mine worked for me, and
That kind of is something I always thought, and just as every child learns differently, every teacher has their own best methods of instructions, and so we can have people that have the same materials, they may use it in slightly different ways and get the same results.
And the exciting part is our classroom teachers, our kindergarten and first grade teachers, are also starting to incorporate some of the SPIRE program, which is going to be our successful program. It's the program we've needed. And they're starting to pick up components of that in the classroom, and yet not swinging it totally. We still know kids need grade-level material. We still know kids need that good literature. They still need that good writing. But they're pulling in those components where it can be more powerful for kids in the classroom, and they can be more successful in their center work or those kinds of things. So they're working
those connections.
So they're working hard too to support us, and this is just a great place to work.
I just wanted to comment about the intervention and just the because you're in kindergarten for a little bit doesn't mean you're in there all the time. Mm-hmm. I think that idea of moving kids in and out of intervention kind of removes the stigma mm-hmm. from it. So everybody's being held at different times mm-hmm. for different things. I think that, is really positive for learning environment.
And that wouldn't happen without having an assessment calendar that's scheduled, and you know we're going to give a diagnostic at periodic times, but also Judy's expertise and the teachers when they come and say, you know what, this kid's got it, we can move this kid, mm-hmm. and having that, and I love it, being a thought partner with them, show me the evidence and help me understand, and then they're like, yep, you're right, he's got it, move it. I knew they knew what they were talking about. Hear what's going on too.
And we have that backed up with data. Back in the day, it was our gut feeling. In the 80s, it was our gut feeling.
Right.
Now it's laid there. This was our goal. This is where they were. This is where they are. Time for them to go. Awesome.
So I'm very interested in this issue about stigma because I've known some kids who really needed an IEP or whatever and were super motivated to get out of it because of stigma, mm-hmm. and I don't really know why there should be any stigma. So, but that's another discussion. The question came to my mind as you were presenting, and thank you for showing those videos because it's really helpful, mm-hmm. To see what it's really like in the classroom. You mentioned that one of the methods programs worked in the 80s and then it didn't work as well. Do you have any idea why that would change over time?
I think it's the children that we're serving now. Children are a lot different than they were in the 80s. This group of children is growing up, with the digital age. There's less communication at home. The dinnertime talks aren't there. We raised our kids with nursery rhymes. We build all that phonological awareness with the stories and all of those things. And now I think, you've got parents working 2 and 3 jobs trying to stay afloat and not as much time to help kids. And I don't think Sesame Street's out there being used like Sesame Street used to be out there being used. We're seeing a lot more kids with communication issues, with language issues. And I think it's just simply our culture, the kids we're serving are changing. They're still cool kids, but they come with different needs.
Right. Okay.
And I would piggyback on that from being a former classroom teacher. Mm-hmm. I think the classroom instruction, where Reading Recovery came in, it was pretty innovative and meeting in small groups. Mm-hmm. When I started, I did Basil, and it was a whole group lesson, and that's all I did. When I think the classroom instruction started to intensify and become more strategic, I think then the Reading Recovery, while it still served a purpose because it was one-on-one, it ended up being more of what was happening in the classroom. Where before that, I couldn't always say that, that instruction was happening in the regular classroom. And so I think that's a piece of it too.
There are two successful outcomes with Reading Recovery, and one was that the child was grade level and was going to be successful, and the other was that it proved that the child needed more intense intervention than usually meant special education. Mm-hmm. Now it means, okay, we're going to try one of our other programs in Tier 2 intervention, and we're going to try to keep you from going to Tier 3. So I think that's where we've gotten better.
Yeah, I would just say the best thing I heard in the whole thing, obviously lots of great things, but your willingness to accept it didn't have to be either or. I know
right.
we had some camps at the beginning, mm-hmm. and the willingness to accept the fact that the beauty became and mm-hmm. not either this or this, but and what mm-hmm. toolbox or what tool is I going to pull from which toolbox to help this kid based on what they needed, and that mm-hmm. came through very clear.
Thank you.
Yes,
and I do want to thank Ms. Delt for sharing her classroom with us as well. Our kindergarten teacher mm-hmm. was here tonight, and thank you, ladies, too. For
thank you. All right. Next up, we have a presentation of our Japanese exchange trip.
And I am a school counselor at Bunsfield Middle School. I speak no Japanese. I read no Japanese. But I thank goodness for Daniel Takamoto. He's not able to be here tonight. He's at the symphony this We are here to share our experience from this summer in Japan. I was unbelievably fortunate to be invited to go as a chaperone. And again, I still don't really speak any Japanese.
I don't know. I heard something when you came in.
Ohio, yes.
There you go.
The cultural experience was incredibly enriching without speaking the language and without being able to read any signs, which is a very humbling experience, certainly was for me. But these guys are the ones who really have cool stuff to share. I'm going to warm you up with maybe some not as exciting things. So this summer we went to Yuri, and we also spent a few days in Tokyo at the very end of our trip. But the bulk of our time was spent in Yuri. The students did an exchange program where they stayed with families and had host siblings and host fathers and host mothers and host grandparents and all that good stuff. So, and throughout the trip, we got to do a variety of things with the people from the city of Yuri, who were the kindest and most welcoming people you could ever meet. Incredibly generous. And one of my favorite things that we did was a traditional Japanese tea ceremony. It was, I thought, incredibly beautiful and very awe-inspiring to be a part of something that is so embedded in their culture. And it just was beautiful. Everything is so precise, every detail, every fold of the napkin, every turn of the cup. Everything is just exactly so. Part of the ceremony is selecting the perfect floral arrangement because it's got to set the tone and the mood for the environment of the tea ceremony. And also, they usually have artwork or some sort of phrase, Japanese phrase, that they present as well, all part of setting the tone and the mood for the ceremony. And there's usually a host. They have tea rooms in their houses, many of them do. Sometimes you have to crawl through a cubby. You stayed in a tea room, didn't you, Colin? Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think you had to crawl through the cubby, though. So it was very close quarters and a very intimate setting. And it's a great social event for Japanese people. So, next, you can see students that were learning how to serve matcha, which is the green tea, and they had to mix it with, believe it was a bamboo kind of whisk, short whisk, because they want it to become frothy. It's right? Frothy. Yeah. So somebody served me my tea, so I didn't have to do any of that, so they served each other. So, but it was really fun to watch all the kids. They really got into it. They experienced the ceremony and had a really great time. And they had several Japanese women that helped them and guided them through the whole process. And it was really quite lovely. And then the next slide shows this beautiful suite in the center. And it's supposed to look like a flower. To me, it looks like a peach. But traditional Japanese sweets are served with tea. It's supposed to enhance the flavor of the tea, and it really does. The tea by itself, if you see head shaking like this, it's not so good. But when paired with the sweets, it really does make it significantly more palatable. I mean, it really was good after the sweet. And the sweets aren't sweet compared to what we're accustomed to. As Americans, you know, I think about sweets, I think about chocolate, I think about cake, I think about cookies. This sweet is actually, and the inside of it, I believe, is red bean paste. Is that correct, guys? Yeah? It has this kind of beautiful, it's not fondant, it's not that hard, but coating that's a little bit sweeter. And they serve it on this beautiful wooden plank, and you slice into it, and you have a little bite of it, and you drink your tea, and oh my gosh, the tea tastes so much better after that. Not so sweet. But again, everything is just so precise and beautiful, and it was an amazing, amazing experience. So, the old lady is done. Oh, and this lady here was our wonderful translator, Naoko. She was an amazing woman and brilliant woman. That's a hard job. constantly switching from one language to the next. She was lovely, so we were fortunate to have her. Old lady's done. Who's next?
All right, I'm Matthew Curie. I'm a sophomore at Marysville Community College High School. So I did my part of the presentation on Shinto shrines. So just to give you a little bit of background on the religion, Shintoism is the second largest religion in Japan. It's only behind Buddhism. So Shintoism teaches its followers that people are naturally good. And so when people go to their Shinto shrine, there's a lot of local shrines in the area. They can ask for different things in their current life, so they don't really pray for things in the afterlife, much like other major religions. So they can pray for good health, prosperity, and even try to check out to be interested. So upon entering the shrine, you have to wash your hands. So you can see it. Here's actually a picture in the last slide, but you kind of had this ladle. You wash over the water with your right hand, then your left, and then in some cases you have to wash your mouth out as well. And I'm not sure why you did that. It's probably just to purify yourself. And then the wooden pieces down there, people can write their wishes and different things they're thankful for, and they can hang them up. And so it's really interesting to go through and read all of them. So the larger one in Tokyo that we went to, there was people from all over the world who wrote things on there. They're really interesting. When walking in to a Shinto shrine, they're usually fronted by a gate, like in the top picture there. And so this was the one that we went to in Tokyo. And so it was a really, really big gate, and there were boys there all over the place. So I just found the Shinto shrine to be really interesting, a different part of the culture that we don't get to experience here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Harrison Gabor. I'm a sophomore at the Marysville Early College High School, and I'm going to talk about the school system in Japan as a part of the presentation. So the school system in Japan is, there were some several differences that I noticed right away when we got there. Well, so the first day when we went to the school, we got there right when they were about to serve lunch. And so one of the first things that I kind of noticed was that at schools, they don't really pack a lunch. They serve it to you, and they're very precise on how what you get. So, like, everybody gets the exact same thing. Like, you get a rice bowl, maybe, you know, like, some sort of chicken, and then maybe a side piece, like a salad, and then something to drink, which was milk. And so they didn't have, like, people who served to the students. The students served themselves, but teachers were there to make sure that the students were being precise in how they served themselves. Also in Japanese schools, when students get to middle school or in high school, everybody's required to learn English. While here in America, we give several language options for students to learn. So after lunch and then after school, students are also required to clean up. After lunch, they clean their trays and everything, and they recycle the milk cartons, and then they brush their teeth after their lunch. And then after school, they wipe down the floors and clean all the rooms. And also the teaching style is also different. Like in schools here in America, when a student is talking, the teacher, of course, tells them to be quiet. While in Japan, if a student is talking and isn't really disrupting the class, the teacher won't tell them to be quiet, because in their idea is that if the student isn't paying attention, it is the student's fault. And so if a test comes up and that they weren't paying attention in class, they're not going to know it. It's the student's fault and not the teacher's. And so I'm also going to talk a little bit about school, after school activities in the title of the school system. So in Japan, they have a variety of after school activities, which almost every student did after school. So we have table tennis, kendo, which is kind of like sword fighting, but with wooden swords. They had track and field, soccer, rugby, baseball, and other after school. school activities that were more academic.
Hello, I'm Mary Calvert. I'm a sophomore at the Marysville Early College High School. So one of the many experiences that we got to experience in Japan was the Yori Summer Festival. So in this summer festival, different groups of people will carry mikoshi, which are portable shrines. Each group has their own different shrine, and there's something different about it, and there's just different kinds of groups. So in the photo, you can see these shoes that we all have on. These are jikatabi, which are traditional shoes that have rubber bases and a slit in between the big toe and the rest of the toes, and they're meant to look like boots, and they were used in farms. And then we have a traditional Japanese coat, which is a hapi. And this is what everybody wore as they were carrying the shrines. So there's a lot of people there who came and watched, and it was a big celebration.
Hello, my name is Grace McMillan. I'm a sophomore at Marysville High School, and I'm going into my third year of studying Japanese. And as you know, I'm going to go to Japan this summer. And my favorite thing to do was to do traditional Japanese papermaking or washing. The history of Japanese papermaking goes back very far. Simple paper originally was made in China, excuse me, and then it moved to Japan in about 610 AD. After that, they had many colors, textures, and designs. So, well, when we made the paper, the paper is made of like a mush like paste made up of different types of plants. So we had to scoop the mush into our molds and make postcards. And then you drape the excess liquid, and then we return to our workstations, which are shown in the pictures. And then we actually used real flower petals and leaves and different kinds of plants, as well as small pieces of thread and tinsel to create our designs for our postcards. And traditionally, people put just very small intricate designs on the postcards, but we could really do whatever we wanted to. And then, so once we were done designing our postcard, we got to lay a thin sheet of different type of paper, and took very long to dry. It took about a day or two to dry, and then we received our paper. So that was one of the things that we did.
Colin Kovacek. I'm a sophomore at the Early College High School. I'm going to be talking to you about some of the Japanese food that most of us got to experience. I was probably one of the most adventurous and risk-taking eaters on this trip. And you'll see in the next slide, not really this one, this one's a little bit more, it's not normal, but I tried a lot of different things, and it was definitely one of the focal points in the relationship with me and my host students. His name was Daiki. He's in the picture on the next slide. We both liked food. We both really bonded over it. He was a big guy. He played rugby. Loved to eat. He, some of the things I ate, he wouldn't dare to get close to them. But I still ate them, and it made him sick every time I ate them. So some of the things that are shown in this, these two things are just traditional Japanese pancakes. We went to a restaurant with my host family and Mary's host family, and we tried these. This one is just mango, and this one is strawberry. On the other side of your side, we have sea urchin sushi. That was probably the most interesting one I tried. We have chum sushi, and egg, and caviar. And then what you see in the top middle is more of a traditional Japanese breakfast. It consists of salmon, sweet beans, tofu, small cherries, rice, tomatoes, and tea. There's usually a lot more, but that's just what my family prepared for that day. So as you can see here, this is Daiki on the right side of me. He was my Japanese host student. This was at Kaitsu Ten Sushi, one of his favorite restaurants, and now one of my favorite restaurants whenever I decide to go back. I think that day he ate about 60 pieces of sushi, and I still don't remember.
Plates piled up.
That's from them.
That's from them.
The bigger plates that have more of a higher base, those are dessert plates. We got a lot of dessert too. And the smaller, thinner plates are just the sushi or more entree type of dishes. Some of the other things I got to experience were eel, which I would say was probably one of the best things I tried there. This is a donut, believe it or not. So in the middle here, this is a fermented bean, which actually has a lot of health benefits. Mm-hmm. It smells pretty nasty, tastes pretty nasty, but it's pretty good for you. In the far top right corner is just fatty salmon. That one is pretty good. Just below that is beef, and the bottom two are cuttlefish and octopus. The octopus was really bad because it was really tough to eat, and it was cold, and that was just an interesting one. And some of the other things I tried were just squid, multiple types of fish, and just a lot of things I definitely would have been able to try here in America. So I'd say that the food was definitely one of the highlights of my trip. It's definitely what made the trip memorable for me, and I'm never going to forget it. Thank you very much.
It was so fun in the evenings because Daniel and I were not with the students necessarily all day or every day. We visited different schools, and the kids were at three different schools. But every night, there was a group chat that we set up, and the WhatsApp. And that's what they talked about, was food. Who ate what, and did you like it, or did you not like it? It was super fun.
I also like to add that this is just a little side of the fact that he and I, just because of how well we bonded, we still communicate today.
Nice.
And I believe he is coming to Marysville here next year, so it's going to be a very exciting year for me, and be able to see him again. So that's going to be very exciting.
Good. What year are you guys in Japanese now? How many years have you taken Japanese?
I've been taking Japanese for 3 years. I'm starting Japanese 3 this year.
Okay.
I'm starting Japanese 2.
Okay.
But this is my third year.
Okay.
I'm starting Japanese 3 this year.
So was there anything in the Japanese school system that you saw that you kind of wish you did here?
I know you want to clean, right? You want to clean the cafeteria. That's right.
The Japanese schools are so clean. It's ridiculous.
I really liked how they had indoor shoes and outdoor shoes so that there weren't like scuff marks from their outdoor shoes or dirt in the schools. So I really like that.
What did they do with their shoes?
They had little puppies.
At every entrance of the schools, they had just rows and rows of shoe lockers, and you take off your outside shoes, put them in a locker, slip on your school shoes, and go to school.
Are they like slippers? The school?
Yeah.
Kind of?
At my school, I went to a different school than all of them. They had specific shoes for school, like 10 shoes.
Okay.
Most of the kids wore 10 shoes at school, but they were just 4 in school.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the teachers are administrators and visitors.
So I have another question. Can you get like hamburgers and pizza?
But there's a couple of stipulations to the pizza part. So, they have pizza. Not only can you get super fun things on your pizza, kind of like some of the things in here, but pepperoni's not a thing. That was just really upsetting for me. Pepperoni's not a thing. It's just salami. No pepperoni, just salami. I called in, we were ordering a pizza. I was the one making the call. I asked for pepperoni. They didn't know.
French fries, grilled cheese.
They had something that my family gave me was French fried potato chips.
Uh-huh.
So they were potato chips, but they were like, I don't know if they were dry French fries. I think that's what they were. They were dry French fries. So I got that a lot. And then to add on to your hamburger thing, they had, when I went to this school, they also had a thing called a hamburger, which is just the pie. So there's no bun or toppings or anything. So you either have just the pie, you just got hamburger, or the hamburger, which is everything that we have. Officials try to take Daniel and I out to Italian restaurants all the time.
Yeah.
I,
I didn't go to Japan to eat Italian food. Right. Yeah, so we finally
the stuff he showed me, though, I don't know that I could do.
Yeah. No. He likes the eel. He likes the fermented beans. But now you say you didn't like them? I thought you did.
They're pretty nasty.
They're disgusting.
But I thought they were good, but every time he looked at them, he'd always look away. Every time I ate it, he would just get out.
The restaurant that you can picture it in, it had a little conveyor belt.
Yes. There was a little touch right here, and you picked out your sushi, and then it would come around on a conveyor belt, you take it off, and then get your sushi.
How about an academic question? Did you feel like this trip helped you very much in your language and the understanding of things?
Yeah. For me, I understand the language a lot better now because I had that face-to-face experience other than communicating over the phone. And kind of like Colin, my host student actually came to America last year, so I got to go and visit her.
Mm-hmm.
When she came to America, we spoke more of English.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was a little bit more advanced than I was, only being in my second year.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went and got to talk to like school teachers and all the different students and stuff, I felt like when I returned to class this school year, I had a lot better of an understanding of how you can use the language.
With my host family, they didn't know a whole lot of English.
Mm-hmm.
Only Daiki, who was my host student, mm-hmm. he knew English because he came 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. He's gonna come back. But like my mom or my host father or my host mother, they didn't know a whole lot of English
mm-hmm.
or any English at all. The only English my host dad knew were joke words, and he would make fun of me in English just with the only English words he knew. it was really funny.
And even the hosting Japanese students on next year, what are the things that you think would be important for them to see?
I know that I actually asked my teacher about this. When I went to my school, they had a ceremony for us. And I noticed that the year before we hadn't had a ceremony for them, or we didn't really recognize it the way that we were recognized there. So I think maybe something like that would be mm-hmm. very cool and respectful to do because they showed that for us. They were only here for, I think, 6 days last summer, so hopefully if they, when they plan the trip again, they'll plan for a little bit longer stay and do more things around the city.
Yeah, I did talk to Ia, and so she's our Japanese teacher, one of the two. The reason that the Japanese students can only come for about a week and a half is because of the timing of our school years. They're supposed to come to Marysville and experience some school life. But when our year starts, it's kind of during their 1 month of summer break. And 1 month, roughly 1 month, it's a little less. They don't get a whole lot of time for break. So they, pretty much once our school year starts, they're almost near the end of their summer break. So they have to kind of get in, experience, and then get out of school. So it's hard to plan around.
Aren't you amazed at how polite everyone is?
Japanese hospitality is better than anything else.
A
lot of respect.
And I was also surprised that young children are very independent.
Yes.
Like, they are getting on, riding the train, multiple stops to their school by themselves in kindergarten.
It's an incredibly safe country. There's not a lot of crime. And the philosophy that Daniel had shared with me and shared with the students is that really they think much more about not making other people's lives difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big thing to them. I wouldn't do this because it might be upsetting to you, or it might be cause a problem for you, and I wouldn't want to do that. So it's really a lot about personal responsibility as it reflects on the group. And I thought it was a really fascinating dynamic to the culture, and it shows from a very young age. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a chance to go, I just couldn't recommend it enough. It was really an amazing experience.
And a shout out at the chamber board meeting this morning. I think I told some of you, but they, Eric Phillips, the executive director of our chamber, and Terry Emery and J.R. Rouse and Charles Hall all made a trip over to Japan, mm-hmm. and they brought back a magazine, and on the front of the magazine, who was it but our students, Marysville students, in that in the festival when they were dressed up. So that was pretty exciting. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, public participation. Okay, let's see. First up, we have Kate. Oops. Well, you know what? I don't think Kate McCartney is from the library, so I don't think she really wanted to do public participation. So I think it's going to be one, and that would be Grace Greer and Kelly Bosold, right? So yeah, so I think you guys have addressed the board before, so I talked to you a little bit before. You have 3 minutes, and if you would state your names and addresses for our records, that would be wonderful.
So my name is Grace Greer. I am a senior in the Marysville FFA chapter, and I am a student advisor. My name is Kelsey Bosold. I'm the president of the Marysville FFA chapter, and I'm also a senior. And today we kind of just wanted to give you guys an update about what the Marysville FFA chapter has done and what we plan to do a little bit in the future. So one of the first things we did over the summer was our alumni FFA meeting and just like regular FFA meeting. And we put those together to kind of get the members and the alumni acquainted and kind of show like what's been going on, get everyone like up to date, and try and get more people involved in our alumni program, which you don't have to be a previous FFA member to be in the alumni program. So if you're kind of interested in that, and then after that.
Oh, okay, so in July, the end of July, the last week of July, we have our Union County Fair, and many of our members participate in showing livestock animals such as cattle, hogs, poultry, sheep, goats, and rabbits. So we all went to the fair and watched them show, and we congratulated them. So another thing that the Mary's FFA has been working on, so we're taking our ag department and we made a social media team. So it consists of some of our officers, some of our ag students, and some of our assistants. So what we've done is we've actually hired somebody to make a social media website for us. So we have a new website. We just launched it, the Marysville Ag Science. So check that out. Some things that are on there is it tells you every class that we have, a description, it highlights students in those classes, highlights the main topics that we're learning right now. Another thing you can do is you can actually schedule a tour with one of the students or ag teachers. You can go in and actually do that on your time and their time. So just pick a day and a time. And the last thing that we're adding on there is virtual tours. So in ag business too, it consists of four students, and these four students selected students throughout the ag program to take videos in different parts of the ag department and talk about why this matters to them and just give you a brief description of each and every idea.
We also, we changed our FFA week to the beginning of the school year just because the end of the school year kind of gets a little bit busy. So we put it in the beginning of the school year, and FFA week kind of consists of like some dress up days where we like do some different things. And teacher appreciation day where we give all of the teachers pies. We go around the school and we give them out pies. And at the end, we had our Ag Appreciation Night, where we purchased receiver gloves to give to all the football players. We also had a Snapchat filter, and it was kind of just to, well, we raised some money for Pride Smarter, so we wanted to support that as well as supporting the agriculture within our community.
I was in charge of our August FFA meeting. This is a meeting with our new members, so we had a swim party, we had good food, a big bonfire, and we bonded with the new freshmen, our incoming new members that are in any grade. Next week, we'll be sending Grace Greer, Corey Lee, and our assistant Aubrey Mosier to OLLC, which is Ohio Legislative Leadership Conference, if you don't know what that is. So they will be learning new leadership ideas. They will be going to the State House and seeing our representatives.
Also coming up, we have National Hunting and Fishing Day this Saturday. It is the 28th annual Union County National Hunting and Fishing Day. So this is kind of just a day to kind of like support why this is important and what this like does for not only our community but other communities. They have this like all over the country. It's a national holiday.
So it is completely free to everyone in the community. You don't have to be an FFA or know anything about agriculture. It is this Saturday from 9 to 12 at Heart of Ohio Fishing Game, which is kind of out by Kroger, if you guys know where that is. So it's like a private club. No one else is really invited to it except for this day in the year. Totally free to everyone. I do have permission slips for that. You can like bring your kids out. There's like trap shooting, fish derby, archery, like a whole bunch of stuff. This Monday, our Vice President Corey Lee and I will be going to the Oldies for a radio station from 8:30 to 10, and we'll be talking on the radio station about what's going on in our ag department and talking about how FFA has impacted our lives and what we'll be doing in the future. Another thing is coming up in October. October 25th through the 28th is National Convention. That is held in Indianapolis. We will be going to the Lucas Oil Stadium for a Rascalpots concert. We'll be going to a hypnotism show and the World Sucks Radio. We will be attending leadership sessions, the career show. We will also be listening to keynote speakers and how FFA has impacted them, or just listening to their stories and encouraging us to do more.
And on October 12th, that is the kickoff for fruit sale. So find an FFA member and get your fruit orders in. We're so excited for this year. And so we kind of just wanted to thank you guys for the support that you give for us, and thank you for letting us come here and share that with you.
Thank you very much. We'll check out your new website.
And if you guys want to meet the team for social media, on the Mary's FFA chapter Facebook page, we did a live stream video for everybody that's on the social media team.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, next up, the High Point Report. As I said, Mr. Chivington is traveling today, so I had sent that report to you. Just a couple of highlights, since we had the middle school students presenting on their trip to Japan. Dr. Smith did approve the Deb Baker, who's the CBI instructor for High Point, to attend the Midwest U.S.-Japan Economic Development Conference that was just held in Tokyo, September 11th and 12th. And then just the only other highlight is that our Deb Wortman, the satellite director, is working with partner schools on program expansions at Marysville. And I know we've heard about some of those and some of Diane's updates. So that's the High Point Report. If you have any questions, feel free to check with Mr. Chivington. Superintendent's Report.
So at each one of your spots, you should have a copy of our school report card on top, and then every school in Union County and the OCC, just to give you some comparison. There's a little slice off on the end of the copy, so I'll send you a PDF of that probably tomorrow or Monday. But it kind of gives you just an overview of some of the things you've been reading about in the paper and online about different districts and their performance level. We've talked about that here. Certainly proud of our value added. That's what we're going to continue to focus on. That measure speaks to the progress you make with kids from where they come in the door and when they leave that experience for that year. So a C is expected growth, and last year for the first time we got straight A's in all subgroups, and this year we were able to maintain that. So not a lot of districts can say that, and obviously last year we received some special recognition for the state for that work. So super proud of that.
Do you mind if I just interject the comment from
That's
what
fine.
I, because it ties right into this. So I had been reading something from State Impact, which I know Mr. Krzyzewski had recommended that I get some of these emails. But Fordham's Ohio Research Director Aaron Churchill encouraged parents to pay attention to one measure in particular, the value-added measure. So just what Diane has been talking about. And he goes on further to say the value-added measure is the best indicator for a school's effectiveness. So I think the fact that we've had straight A's 2 years in a row just speaks volumes. So sorry about that.
No, you're fine. Okay. So if you have any questions, as always, just let me know. But it just gives you kind of a glance of what's happening. We tend to compare ourselves to several different places, so I tried to do that landscape for you.
Thank you.
Since the last time we met, I did want to recognize the work that went into our community pep rally. Now it seems like it's been a very long time ago, but certainly the Partners Park community pep rally was a lot of fun. I really am enjoying the enthusiasm that is taking place with the football team this year, and mm-hmm. kind of this larger sense of community connectiveness. And I thought that the whole night was a great success, and I know it was a lot of work by the band and the cheerleaders and everyone involved, so I wanted to mention that. Also, I wanted to give you an update. The started working on basically a progress report for our strategic plan. So we have been collecting evidence, and as we look at that strategic plan, providing evidence for kind of where we are in that strategic plan, we hope to produce a document that board members could use at your coffees and et cetera as talking points, as well as probably include it in maybe the quality profile or one of those issues that goes out to the entire community about our progress thus far in that work. As you all know, I sit on the state superintendent's advisory board. We had a meeting yesterday, and as you might imagine, the state report card was a hot topic. And one thing in particular I think that resonated pretty well to the state superintendent was districts felt as if when you open that report card, and certainly you get the green check mark if you get it, and a big red X if you don't. However, many of the districts had moved, let's say, 20 points or 40 points in the collection of points, especially in the achievement side is where they were referring mostly. And the idea would be, you know, if there's a huge increase, couldn't, even though we didn't meet the 80%, couldn't that be recognized in some fashion instead of a red X that you still didn't make the mark? Felt like teachers were really working hard and students were working hard, and sometimes the red X was not supportive of that work. So we talked about the option of maybe, you know, a light green arrow or a yellow arrow pointing up to show that that had increased, but you hadn't made the mark yet. So kind of that growth mindset idea. So lots of conversation there. I think the there's a large strategic planning process happening with the State Department. So we'll hang on and see some of the new ideas they're going to have around accountability and assessments as well. So that started yesterday, actually, as well. Last night I had the opportunity to also present the stadium project to the MAA group. I was very well received, great feedback, had some questions. I think we were able to, or I was able to answer some questions about money, understanding where the money is coming from, what we're looking for in fundraising, why the two ideas of a track and a football separate facility. And so left with lots of great remarks, referred them to the website, so we're starting to get that momentum moving. Todd's group, I think, is meeting next week or the week after in hopes of kind of maybe organizing like a larger kind of kickoff type activity, so stay tuned for that as well.
Good. Any questions? Good. Okay. Treasurer's report.
Okay. For my report, I'm presenting the October 5 forecast.
Okay. Should have a drum roll or something.
Okay, so presenting the October 2017 five-year forecast, we actually had our finance committee meeting on September 11th where we presented the forecast there. A lot of good questions, a lot of good feedback on the forecast. Overall, the committee was good with the assumptions and the data that went into the forecast, and as we always know, forecast is always changed the day after you create it, so this is where we are right today, but I'm sure things will change shortly. First slide I always like to show is just looking at revenues versus expenditures. The top line there, blue is revenue, red is expenditures. This line is pretty well in line with where it was last time I presented it, but we're just, you know, pushing it out another year there. This graph here does not assume passage of the renewal levy, so that's why you're going to see expenditures exceeding revenue a little sooner. So this is without the levy. And then you see the bottom line there, that green line is our ending balance. So you can see there in fiscal year 22, without the renewal of that levy, we would be in a cash balance deficit. This slide was created just to show how we are going compared to our cash balance policy. And it shows that, and again, the ending balance here assumes that the levy would be renewed. Okay, so we would be meeting our two parts for our cash balance policy. We would be meeting the ending cash balance policy throughout the forecast, assuming that we do renew that levy. Although we would in fiscal year 20, we would not have revenue exceeding expenditures by 1%. So that part of the cash balance policy we would not be meeting starting in fiscal year 20. I think what's interesting about this slide, more so than in a year, I mean, to look at that ending cash balance, it's almost a perfect arc, which is really how state law has basically created school funding to be. In a lot of districts, what you'll see is that same arc, because expenditures are going to steadily rise with inflation and, employees will get raises and those kinds of things. And typically what you'll see is a district will pass a levy, which increases the revenue, and then the revenue stays flat due to House Bill 920, so the revenue won't increase beyond that initial year, and then expenditures start to eat into that balance, so that's where you get that arc. Interestingly, in Marysville, we have that same arc, but it wasn't due to passing a levy. We've been fortunate over the last few years to have some nice increases in our state revenue that's finally starting to catch up to where we should be funding. And there were also some nice boosts. In particular, would be our public utility personal property tax revenue. The last couple of years has really gone up as well. This slide here shows our local revenues versus our state revenues. Even though it's only slight in percentage-wise over the last few years, it's been slanting more towards the state sources. I think originally it was pretty well closer to 50-50, but due to the increase in our state foundation funding, it started to skew a little more towards higher on the state side than the local side. One interesting bit on the revenue side is on the other local revenue. That's where we code our open enrollment. So open enrollment this year actually increased by about 15 students, which would generate an additional $90,000. Mm-hmm. So that's been a nice benefit to the district and a boost in revenue. And again, this slide shows local versus state funding. This slide really points to the importance of renewing that levy, because as you see here, we're anticipating state revenues to start to decline. I've got another slide that's going to talk a little bit about the tangible personal property revenues. That's been declining and it's being phased out. But then also with the state share index, and what that basically says is because our property values in Union County are really going up and higher than what most other counties are experiencing. The state looks at us as a wealthy school district, a wealthy county, so they feel like we should be able to provide additional local funding, whereas they're going to provide less state funding. So we're anticipating we're probably going to hit our peak with our state foundation revenue in fiscal 19, and it's probably going to start to go down at that point. Now, there's two major variables in there that could change that. One is our appraisal from the county auditor. That's going to be in 2019, so kind of depends where that ends up coming in at. And two is the state budget. You know, that's going to be a new state budget at that point. It's starting in 2020, so that'll have an impact as well. This slide I originally showed you in October 2016. So, and this were, you know, this is where I showed the blue line was the increase in state aid, the red line was the decrease in tangible personal property reimbursement. And kind of the whole point of this was to show it's nice we're getting this increase in state foundation revenue, but at the same time they're taking away our TPP. To some extent, it's offsetting. The good news at this point was, if you look at that in total, you know, there was a bigger increase. The increase in state aid offset the TPP decrease. Now, unfortunately, this slide totally changed with the new state budget. And I kind of had to change it, you know, instead of showing increase in state aid, I had to change it to show change in state aid, because it's not always an increase now. Based on the new state budget, and again, our projections with the state share index, we're anticipating actually losing money in state aid in fiscal year 20. So I guess, and then the red line there showing the TPP decrease, that really hasn't changed from last year. But unfortunately, the big change with this slide is now, if you look at it in total, it's actually a deficit. The decrease in TPP is now larger than the increase in state aid in total. Again, values have been increasing. We had our triennial update in 2016, led to almost a 10% increase in property values. So that was big. As I mentioned, our public utility personal property tax went up an additional $6 million. So again, that was very, very good for district revenues. As I mentioned, our full countywide appraisal will be in 2019. We're estimating a 5% increase in overall values. There's been a lot of talk about the CAUV values and the change in the law there, and you know, a lot of districts are kind of worrying about what the impact of that's going to be. So this forecast does anticipate an impact there. We're anticipating that the impact will happen in 2019 with the appraisal. What we'll expect to see is that CAU values will drop. We don't anticipate a large impact on our revenue. One, we're expecting other values to go up while the CAUV goes down, so this should relatively offset. And two, due to House Bill 920, if CAUV values go down to, you know, a really large extent, residential values would increase to offset that. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it shifts the tax burden a little more to our residential taxpayers from the CAUV taxpayers.
So we won't know that until 2019?
Correct. Now, there are some schools that are, it really depends on when your county is doing the appraisal. Mm-hmm. So some counties will be experiencing that next year, some schools will.
So in our school district, what percentage is coming from agricultural land versus?
Percentage wise, it's probably about, I'm going to say about 10%, because I think it's about 90 some million dollars is ag. Now, not all of that is actual CAUV, so I don't know the breakout of the total ag property, how much of it is CAUV. So it's about 10%. Looking on the expenditure side, you know, it's typical with any school district. Salaries and benefits make up the majority of our expenditures. You know, one thing to note there, we switched to self-insurance. I guess that's been almost two years ago now. That's been really beneficial. You know, I think over the last two, we've got a premium renewal coming up, and then in the previous premium renewal, we would have been looking at double-digit increases had we not switched to self-insurance, so that's been a big benefit. At the same time, they still have been and will be large increases. Our insurance costs are growing faster than the rate of inflation, so that's definitely something to watch and something that is impacting our expenditures going forward. You know, we meet with our insurance committee, and we've done a lot of good things there to get that renewal down. We've done something called a pharmacy carve-out, where you actually select certain pharmacies, and then they will give you better rates due to kind of pushing people towards those. So, you know, that was able to knock a couple percent off. You know, we do kind of some competitive bidding with different administrative costs within the insurance, so that also knocked a percent or two off there. So, always doing whatever we can to you know, make sure we can keep the renewal as low as possible. Levy history: haven't had a new levy issue passed since 2008. Previous to that, it was 1998, so there was a 10-year period in between new money levy issues. So it's once we hit 2018, that will be a decade since our last new money levy was passed. As I mentioned, that 2013 renewal levy, 6.56 mils, that's going to expire in 2019. And as I showed on our ending balance slide, you know, we need to pass a renewal there just for the long-term health. It's going to prevent us from going into a cash deficit as soon. We had a meeting earlier this week, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. So when we talked about our levy options, I just wanted to highlight a few of the main points as to, you know, why we need to ensure this levy doesn't expire. So this was passed at a 6.56 mils, but due to House Bill 920, as property values go up, the millage goes down, so that we collect the same amount of money, and as a taxpayer, you pay about the same amount of taxes on this levy. So it's a low millage now. As a residential taxpayer, it's actually down to 2.691 mils. So for that low millage, it's generating $3.2 million. So that $3.2 million, you could equate that to whatever expenditure you want. I like to equate it to teachers because that's what we do. And, you know, depending on what level of teacher you select, I mean, that's well over 50 teacher salaries and benefits. So very important to the district. Due to that difference in millage, residential taxpayers are paying almost 2.7 mils. Commercial taxpayers are paying 6.3 mils on this levy. If this levy were to expire, we can't come back for a new levy and ask for a different level for residential and a different level for commercial. So if we were to have to come back with a new levy to generate $3.2 million, we'd be coming back with about a 4 mil levy, which means that would be a tax burden shift. Residential would now be paying about a mil and a half more than they do with the current levy, whereas the commercial taxpayers, they would save about 2 mils compared to the current tax levy. And the other main point is the 10% rollback reimbursement. Basically, when you pay your property taxes on this levy, the state is actually kicking in about 10% of that for you in the form of a rollback reimbursement. I think about 3 or 4 years ago, the state law changed to where any new levies, the rollback reimbursement no longer applies. So if this levy were to expire and we passed a new levy in its place, you'd be paying 10% more than what you pay right now. And then also, as I mentioned, passing this levy will have a positive cash balance through fiscal year 22, so getting close to actually 15 years between new money. I came across an article, you know, Diane talked a little bit about the report card. I think it was, might have been the Columbus Business Journal, that had, it ranked the 28 Central Ohio schools, and when I say Central Ohio, it's really a broad, you know, it goes all the way up to Newark and down to Taze Valley, so it's really a broad-reaching Central Ohio, ranked the top 28 Central Ohio schools based on performance index, which I thought was interesting, and since we've been talking about, you know, levies and millage, I'm like, you know, so, you know, wonder where we rank in there based on levies compared to, based on millage compared to these other districts. And I pulled out, there was probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 districts that had income tax. So I pulled those out because you can't really compare apples to apples when you're talking millage with a district that has an income tax, because they're going to have a really low millage where they're collecting a lot of their money on income tax. So this first slide is the top 10 districts based on performance index. The red bar shows Marysville. So Marysville was ranked 9th on this this presentation on performance index. But as you can see, this is showing the mills. So Marysville is just under where we had about 29 mills of operating millage. And this is based on 2015 tax rate. So that's actually down to 26 now. But this was the data that was available for, so I could compare all districts. So you can see we're actually about 10 mills lower than any other district in the top 10. And in some cases, you know, at least 15 or more mills below that. Yeah, so that... Right.
Who's number 8?
Number 8, I believe, is Worthington. So the next slide, I brought in all the districts that, except, like I said, except for the income tax district. Mm-hmm. So this one shows, I brought in the performance index score as well. So this, you know, on the left, you've got your performance index score. On the bottom, you've got the millage rate. Where you would want to be on this scale would be to the far left and as high as possible. You mm-hmm. want to have as high of a performance index as possible, but as low as a millage as possible for our taxpayers. Mm-hmm. So again, the red dot there shows Marysville well above the average when it comes to performance index compared to these other districts, mm-hmm. Whereas we're the third lowest millage rate. And compared to those, there's two other districts that are a little lower than us. Those two districts are actually much smaller than us, but at the same time, they are several points. You know, I think they're about 5 points below us on the performance index.
What type of performance index is it?
It's our on the report card.
Oh, okay. So what do you make of that?
Well, I think you could extrapolate a lot of things out of this. I mean, you know, one, the thing that I look at it as is our taxpayers are getting a lot of bang for the buck. I mean, you're paying one of the lowest tax rates in Central Ohio, yet we've got an above average performance index. Mm-hmm. So that's what I see. You know, one, I think one thing we're always compared with is Dublin because of the sports rivalry and mm-hmm. the proximity. You know, I think based on this most recent performance index, we're only 3 points below them on performance index, whereas we're double digit below them on millage.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really interesting, but I don't have to think about that, how to interpret that.
Yeah, I mean, you could...
It might not have... Our millage is low. What would our performance be if it was comparable to these other schools? Have you thought about that?
Sure.
You can always do more with more money, right?
Well, if you use it well, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Our community, you know,
Well,
we're doing for the all the
other
this, like, right information.
Oh, yeah. It looks good, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something that we pride ourselves on here in Marysville, you know, just trying to be frugal, you know, but responsible and use the money wisely.
Yeah, and I think to me that's partly a credit to Diane because, mm-hmm. as you know, as the staff yes. mentioned here today, you know, Steve Griffin's one of the best hires we had. Well,
yes.
I mean, we were able to do that without really adding a lot in salary-wise because we were able to shift things around and, mm-hmm. you know, position opens up instead of just mm-hmm. refilling that position. What can we do different and innovative that's going to best benefit students? You know, so those are the kind of things that allow us to, you know, be that low on the millage scale and still that high on performance index. That's all for me. If there's any questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Yep.
Again, it's a very complicated information.
Thank you. Okay, let's see. Board President's report. Like I mentioned earlier, our next community coffee is going to be this Saturday at the Raymond Library. So Mr. Smith and I are scheduled to cover that, and it starts at 10 o'clock because the library doesn't open until 10. So we hope to see a bunch of people there. I also want to bring up the work session that Todd had referenced on Monday. So Monday, just this last Monday, believe it or not, we met and spent a good hour discussing some options for that expiring levy. And I appreciated all the options that they presented. And I know our finance committee was also presented those same options. And their recommendation is a little complex, but I know we're going to do what we've done in the past, and that's we've got a strong levy committee, and the focus is always going out and having some face-to-face conversations with people. Because I know and I don't know if you wanted a brief overview of that recommendation or not, but I know that our bond fund is collecting more than it needs, so the whole idea was to shift some funds from the bond fund to the PI, which would allow us to use some TIF money that has been going to the PI and shift that to the operating fund. And at the end, with all those shifts, it gives us additional money in the operating fund, which would extend the need to have new money by potentially another year. And all of this at no additional cost to the taxpayer. No change no additional millage. So, I guess in my mind, I kind of have these pictures of little overflowing pots, and you're moving something from one pot to the next, and the end result is you've got some extra in that operating fund, and that's the fund that, all the other funds are providing what we need to cover our expenses. So, I appreciated the presentation. I've heard it twice now, and so it makes a lot of sense to me. I'm looking forward to having our committee kind of get a hold of it and come up with some ways to educate our community.
And I think everybody understands it different. Nobody seems to understand it when I say it, but it makes sense in my head. But the thing that's interesting to me about it is just the TIF money and how it's been used. Throughout is the time we've had it, because originally our bond fund was not self-sufficient, so the TIF money was used to kick in to help pay for debt. At the same time, because that was happening, our PI fund was not self-sufficient. We didn't have enough money to keep up with the school buses we need and the asphalt that we need. So now that the bond fund is self-sufficient, the TIF money is now being used to keep our permanent improvement fund self-sufficient, which it is. But as that bond millage goes down, and if we are able to pass some additional millage in the PI fund, making our PI fund self-sufficient, we could then use that TIF money to help prolong our next levy ask on the operating side.
Good stuff. So yes, if anybody has any questions or needs a refresher course, they'll give Todd a call, right? Let's see. I had a chamber meeting this morning, and the Covered Bridge Festival is this weekend. So I encourage people to go out to Pottersburg Bridge. It's a really nice community event. They also talked about, like I said, about their trip to Japan. And one other thing that I wanted to bring up, because I thought this was pretty amazing, is that, a couple things. First, their purpose of going on these trips is they visited 7 of 22 companies. They wanted to attend the Japanese Midwestern Conference, where there were 7 governors from the Midwest who attended this conference in Tokyo. They also wanted to visit URI to maintain and grow our relationship with them. And a lot of that is because 24% of jobs in Union County come from Japanese companies. But one thing that I was very proud of is they talked about the fact that our Japanese program in Marysville Schools is the number one Japanese program in the state. And how many years have we had it now? Is it three or four years, and number one program in the state. So that's a lot to be proud of. Let's see. I also wanted to do a shout out to Coach Cusack. He's our bowling coach. He had sent me an email that recognized the fact that our bowling team has been the conference champs 2 years in a row, and that last year's state champ only had one loss, and that was to Marysville. So I know he's proud of that, and we're proud of all the work that he's done, and proud of the work that our bowlers do too. Also, kind of a highlight, Richwood Bank is opening their new branch in Marysville on Friday. And their coffee, the coffee house there, they're setting that up that you can support different nonprofits in Union County when you go to get some coffee. You buy, you make a donation, and then you get tokens to use them to buy coffee. And Marysville Schools is one of those nonprofits. So
they also sent an email this week offering to be a site for one of your coffees if you were interested in doing that at some point. So
yeah,
let us know.
Yeah, that would be
so fun. Now, is that so if I go in there and I buy $20 or donate $20 to Marysville Schools, then they just give me tokens to get coffee. Do we get all of that money? And how does that come in? Where does that come into?
That, I'm guessing it's just going to come into the operating funds.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you
set up
a special account or if you want to direct. I mean, I don't know if you want to. I guess that'll be something you guys get to talk about. Figure out where what to do. Yeah.
Is that like an ongoing thing or is that a promotion?
Yeah, no, it's an ongoing
thing. And
they
got really cool coffees I can
see.
So
and
I
it's,
will
and
go on that.
If you've gone to, I've been to it up in Richwood because they did the same thing at their home branch, and it's a really nice setting. So. And also, our Spanish exchange is going on right now, I believe. And so I actually got to go to an opening when they had the Spanish teachers and the students at the high school all together. And I think it's kind of exciting. It kind of speaks to the collaboration in our district. You know how we've had our evening of Japanese culture. Well, now the Spanish teachers are planning a Hispanic cultural night on November 16th. Unfortunately, that's a school board meeting night. But that it's supposed to go from 5 to 8, so we could potentially make a quick little stop in there. But I just like the idea that, you know, they're kind of trying to promote that Hispanic culture, too, and pull our community in and kind of share what's happening with our Spanish program. Mm-hmm. And then, as always, the highlight, the updates about, or just reminders about things going on. Next Wednesday, the 27th, is going to be the OSB Central Region Conference. I know a lot of you are attending that. The Capitol Conference is November 12th to 14th, and then I just got an email about the ED, the Economic Development 411, and that's December 1st. I know, good. Man, and I, that's a great event, I think. And then finally, got something in the mail from Pebble and Wagner, our lawyers, and they have a school law update seminar next Thursday, September 28th, at Hilton Easton. Were you planning to go to that? We went to that, was it last year?
I had not received that email, so I didn't
know. Well, I got a letter, so I'll give that to you. But if anybody's interested, it goes from like 9 o'clock in the morning until 3:30, and Pebble and Wagner, just they go over a variety of legal issues for school districts. So it's just kind of professional development. It's at the Hilton Easton on Thursday, September 28th. So I'll give that to you. But if anybody's interested, it's worthwhile. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. I know I've been to it once, and I thought we went. Yeah, Dick and I went. I thought there was just some good information there. So, and this was our first month of having building notes, which is always exciting. And Tri-Academy, I was blown away. I printed it off. I mean, just tons of great information in there. It's all about innovation and collaboration, and it definitely inspired me when I looked at it. Just the targeted work that's aligned to all of our, you know, the four areas of our strategic plan. So I just encourage all the board members to make sure you read through those building notes, and anybody out in the audience or anybody listening, you know, go to the board docs and read through those building notes, because there's just a lot of great work going on in the district. So thank you. And that's all I have. Legislative report?
Legislature has begun functioning after the summer recess. The House Education heard testimony on four bills. Of those four bills, House Bill 21 on verification of community school enrollment, and House Bill 108 that would require a half unit of instruction in fiscal literacy are probably two that have the most direct impact, or could have the most direct impact on our district. Over in the Senate, they heard testimony on four bills. Senate Bill 172 talks about schools ensuring that they, in providing lunch for kids that don't have the money to pay at the time they go through the lunch line, that I guess in New Mexico, maybe, they had a school district that would stamp the back of the kid's hand and, you know, I need lunch money or something like that. And so this bill is would require school districts to try to set up some way not to involve the kids in the collection of the school lunch money, to make sure that the kids had something to eat and that attention was not called to the student, but that the school still had opportunity to collect for the lunch. That's Senate Bill 172. Senate Bill 170 would begin to establish computer science courses, direct some development correction curriculum in that area. And Senate Bill 104 would prevent the use of seclusion. And maybe most importantly, Senate Bill 105 would establish October as Principal's Month. So of those three bills, that one is most likely, in my opinion, to pass. There are two bills that are being kicked around at this time that were, have not yet had hearings, as far as I'm aware. There's two companion bills, Senate Bill 85 and House Bill 200, that would completely revamp the voucher system in Ohio. And from conversations that I've had, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of support for the bill, but it's definitely going to create a lot of discussion about the voucher program. Senate Bill 82, was sponsored by a senator from Cleveland, and it would require public schools to call parents within 60 minutes of the start of the school day if the student is absent without parent notification. And there are a number of issues inherent in just trying to meet that. That's probably not realistic to be able to do that, but I understand she's the senator's very passionate about this. Couple of other things. They're trying to set up opportunities, I don't know if it falls right into this area, with seniors at Windsor Manor, the Gables, Carriage Court, Bluebird Retirement Community, and Brookdale, Marysville, and trying to find the time to get something scheduled that doesn't conflict with something else that they have has been a challenge, but I'm still pursuing that. And then I mentioned the other day I'm going to be attending two stakeholder meetings in the Department of Higher Ed on October 4th and October 20th to discuss the rules for College Credit Plus, student eligibility to enter the program, and the types of courses are the two main topics. And that's it.
All right. Thank you. Safety and what?
And I can't remember whether I mentioned this the other day or not, but I did get a call earlier this week, and I was asked to be on the national national relations federal relations group and asked if I would go to Washington, D.C. In February.
Good. Great. Thank you. Okay, looks like we have something for our from our Safety and Drug Committee.
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
First of all, we'll have kids at the football game this Friday giving out pom-poms and start talking materials at high school. Okay, so make sure you get some of that. Our Start Talking Ambassadors from the 5 Minutes for Life program, if you're again, it says we'll be at the football game, then you see Fairbanks and North Union. Also, they're going to go there. 35 students have signed up to participate in the ambassador training so far. I thought this was interesting. A majority of substance-free adolescents credit their parents for the decision not to use illegal substances, including alcohol. I just thought that was really neat that the kids were bringing that up. If you see the second page, it's your invited Clearing the Air workshop on October 20th at Marysville High School Auditorium. And if you look on the back, the presenter from Youth to Youth International, Ty Sells, is the one that's going to be doing it. What it's going to be about with the changes to the marijuana legislation in Ohio, there's an increased need to clear the air regarding myths about pot. Young people think smoking pot is no big deal or even safe. Much of what they believe is based on what they have heard from their friends or media. This workshop will examine strategies to get behind the smoke screens and engage teens in a conversation about marijuana. So I'm going to attend that. That is on my calendar, so because I think I can even do that with you know, work with people I work with and be a two-part with this. So.
Okay. Is this something that our students are going to be attending, or is this more for
the
community?
Well, it's got school and grade.
Okay.
See, it says join other high school students from Union County.
Invitation only. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So, I just think it'd be really neat for as many kids to be able to get there as possible. That would, because of it coming up and going to be legal, I think that they need to get all the information into their hands as possible.
Okay, good.
And here's some up here, if anybody wants to take it. There's two sheets to every app.
Thank you. Okay, moving on, I'd take a motion to approve minutes from both our August 17th regular meeting and our September 18th special meeting.
That's so moved.
Motion by Ms. Savage. I'll second that. Roll call.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next, if you recall, as part of the Capitol Conference, we are supposed to nominate somebody to be our business delegate to attend the business meeting, and I believe I'm going to go ahead and nominate Mrs. Savage to be that business delegate. We've talked about it a little bit. I know a couple of us have had some experience, and we want to spread the joy, the fun. Yes. So I make a motion to approve Nan Savage as our delegate. Any comments, questions? If not, roll call.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes, thank you, ma'am.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
All right, motion carries. And then we also need to have an alternate in case Mrs. Savage can't go. And as the immediate past business delegate, I'd like to make a motion that Mr. Smith be the alternate.
And I will second that.
Okay. Any comments, questions?
Van is not going to back out.
Okay. All right. Roll call.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
All right. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. The next item on here, we need a motion to approve all of the treasure items.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers?
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Comments.
Yeah, the main items on there. We received a new federal grant. It's not just Marysville. I think it's pretty much statewide. but that's a Title IVA grant, just under $12,000. That's going to be used to purchase a basically a new assessment system for high school students. There's a donation on there from Honda America of $1,500 to Creekview, and that's for the sixth grade camp, for scholarships for the sixth grade camp. And also just note that the we're approving the amounts and rates. That's something we do every year in September. It's from the county auditor, just to basically showing what our tax rates are and what they estimate that that will generate.
Okay. And a couple new student activities in there, which we've talked about Rho Kappa, the social studies, social studies honorary kind of group, and then the closed closet activities. So, yeah. Okay. Any questions? Okay, then roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And next we have our superintendent items. So, I would accept the motion to approve the superintendent items.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. You're on.
We have a few HR. We have items on there, a couple resignations. I'm not sure how long Carol Hauser has been here as a bus driver, but it's been quite some time. So she is on for retirement, as you can see. So we want to thank her for her time. Mm-hmm. Definitely supplementals that are kind of traditional at this time of year with groups at the – a lot of these are high school groups. Mm-hmm. Tons of volunteers, pages.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I knew. Like, it was like – 17 pages.
There's
it's
a lot.
Crazy, yeah.
And then some trips as well. We have a band trip, a choir trip, and also a family consumer science trip.
Mm-hmm. Any questions?
Oh, for the band trip, it says they're going to see a Broadway play.
Mm-hmm.
So what are they going to see?
I did not ask that question.
Better be musical. It looks like a really good trip.
Yeah, I know.
They.
Yeah.
It
I
is.
Am very impressed with this volunteer list.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
It's huge.
It is. Yep. It's always good.
The one
good to see that.
Thing about here is it seems like we still have them on every month. There's more.
I know.
Adding,
right.
But this one was longer than I remember at the beginning of the year. But
it's exciting to know that you are actually having the community wanting to participate, parents, everything to participate in being a part of the school system.
And I think it's a good reflection of how welcome they feel, too. You know, I mean, I know just coming out here, every building, I mean, there's just great relationships between, and it's not just parents, it's community members, it's grandparents, it's alumni, it's past board presidents, right? So, yeah, good stuff. Okay, roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And now, any comments and or questions from board members? So we'll start down there with you, Mr. Smith.
It's when we talk about developing partnerships, and I think the volunteer list shows that there's evidence of partnership with the parents and the people. I would like to point out that I continue to see and hear evidence of support for the athletic fields, competition fields. The questions that I've had from people at this point, once they understand some of the benefits, it makes sense to them. And so I think we'll continue to put information out and opportunities to what people ask us questions, we can get that across. And it was called my attention that there are groups, former classes from MHS that are looking at this project and so forth. That's nice. The I think this, you know, at this point, school year has gotten off, and everybody's starting to get into the group, and the things that I've seen, the things that I've heard, are all real positive, and so that's all I'm saying. And thank you very much for hosting us. Always on the cover.
Thank you very much for hosting us. We do love coming up here. Just a reminder, community coffee, Raymond Library, and we're hoping to get a good turnout. And I would like to request that we have the football boards, the display boards, at the community coffee. Would that be possible?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
You're typing over here.
Yeah, those are at the central okay. office. So yeah.
Okay.
And now you can also pick up in my office. I've got extra flyers
brochures and stuff.
Brochures,
okay, great. So. Yeah. I'll tell you. I'm pretty close by. Right. Yeah, as long as I remember. Yes.
Can I get some of those flyers?
Absolutely.
Can I just pick them up.
Yeah, they're on my desk. Okay. I'm on my.
Were they going to be at the meeting this Thursday? This coming Thursday.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I can just pick them up then.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So just excited about that. Hearing lots of good feedback. Have a call. Mike is confirming that. With one of our sponsors, the Hope to Be sponsors. So just real excited to participate in getting that going.
It's great to be back at Raymond. My two stepkids went here, and I don't get back as often as I'd like, so I really enjoy that. I want to thank you for putting the report card comparison together. It's not just seeing our report card, but having some idea of how the others are doing too is really helpful. I like the videos with the teaching. It really helps me remember how that teacher-student interaction is so key. It's really central to education. Everything else is important too. Mm-hmm. And the Japanese presentation was very helpful and exciting, and I didn't know that Marysville has the number one Japanese program in the state.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really great, and we should get that word out. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm. It is, yep. Johnson?
Nothing to add.
Okay, nothing? Okay, yep. I just want to encourage all of us that have building liaisons, who are building liaisons, whatever you want to say that, to set something up and start visiting those buildings and just see all the good things going on in there. Thank you, Carol. That was a great presentation. I love the second grade data, you know, like that visual of how much that all day, every day kindergarten and this change in the supports have really brought a lot of great results. So that's good.
I did neglect to say that after this month has been data team meetings with Steve in the buildings.
Yes.
And he gave a report out to me that Raymond is in the highest alignment across the district to take care of the third grade test. So he was very, at that point in time. So he was very, very excited at the growth and where kids were. And we were opening this larger discussion at a couple of schools that tend to have a higher poverty rate around the summer dip. It seems to be very real there if we're looking at our post data and our students coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So rethinking summer opportunities. But certainly he was very, very complimentary of the work taking place here at Raymond.
Good. And I think when you think about that summer dip and our relationship with the library, that's a good thing right there. Mm-hmm. So with that, how about can we have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Sure.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Powers. Roll call.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Ms. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Luke.
Yes.
Ms. Savage.
Yes.
Ms. Devine.
Yes. Motion carries.